Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino.
That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
The loss of a baby, no matter how early in pregnancy, is real, and so is the grief that comes with it. How do you cope with losing a child? What are some of the challenges? And how can you find the support you need to deal with this difficult experience? I'm Yvonne Rothermel, a licensed clinical social worker specializing in postpartum mood disorders, birth trauma, and infant loss. And this is Preggy Pals, episode 33.
Is that a plus sign?
Pink or blue?
Hospital or home birth?
What type of food should I be eating?
I think I just peed myself.
I'm pregnant. And I have to exercise?
What pregnancy glow?
Wait, was that a contraction?
Gotta make these pants fit! I've got cankles!
What do you mean there's more than one?
You've got the symptoms, and now you've got the support you need for a happy 9 months. This is Preggy Pals, your pregnancy your way. Welcome to Preggy Pals, broadcasting from the Birth Education Center of San Diego. I'm your host, Sunny Galt. Have you heard about the Preggy Pals Club? This is our exclusive membership club for all of our loyal listeners. You get all of our archived episodes, bonus material after every new show, and special giveaways and discounts. Visit our website, PreggyPals.com, for more information. Okay, so before we get started with today's show, we're going to introduce our panelists here in the studio. And all of our panelists today have experienced miscarriage first time, sometimes multiple times. So here are our ladies. Emily, let's start with you.
Okay, my name is Emily Hansen Trent. I'm 30 years old. I'm a cook, and I don't have any of my own children yet. I do have an 8-year-old stepson who's awesome. I have experienced 3 unsuccessful pregnancies. The first was a miscarriage very early on, and the second and third had to be medically terminated because of a fatal birth defect called sirenomelia.
Okay, Deborah.
My name is Deborah Boswell. I'm 44 years old. I'm a stay-at-home mom, and I have 2 beautiful daughters. I lost 2 pregnancies, like Emily, and my first one was very early on. The doctor said that it probably just never really took. And then the second was a medical termination, and that was due to Down syndrome that was terminal.
Okay, and both of those pregnancies were prior to having your girls, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay, Suzanne?
Hi, I'm Suzanne Wells. I'm 43. I'm a research scientist, and I have 2 sons that are 9 and 10. Those were my first 2 pregnancies, both full term and healthy. I then lost my next 3 pregnancies after that. The first loss was a 13-week miscarriage. The second was at 15 weeks, I had a premature rupture of my amniotic fluid due to an intrauterine infection called chorioamnionitis. My third loss was an 8-week miscarriage again.
Okay. Thank you, ladies, for being here.
For nearly 4 decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
We have a comment from one of our listeners. This comes from Carrie of Oregon, and she sends us this message through Facebook. Carrie says, "Hi, Preggy Pals. I've been listening to your show ever since I found out I was pregnant. Being a first-time mom, I have a lot of questions about breastfeeding, so your recent episode listing the top 10 reasons to breastfeed was very helpful to me. In fact, I downloaded it through my app so I could refer to it after the baby is born, just in case I need some reassurance. You always hear that breast is best, but knowing the ins and outs of why is also really important. Thanks for providing us soon-to-be moms with such a great resource. Well, thank you so much, Carrie, for sending us this lovely message through Facebook. Of course, if you guys want some great information about breastfeeding during pregnancy or after you've had your baby, be sure to check out our sister show, The Boop Group, at theboopgroup.com.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
Today we are debuting a two-part series focused on loss, specifically miscarriage and stillbirth. This is a topic that many of our listeners have asked for, and while it's a difficult topic to talk about, we feel it's very important to explore all aspects of pregnancy, and unfortunately, loss of a child does occur. Now, this episode is not intended to scare you, but to provide you with information for you or a friend who may need to deal with this difficult experience. Yvonne Rothermel will be our expert for this two-part series. Yvonne is a licensed clinical social worker specializing in loss. Yvonne, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So let's start off the show by talking about some terms, some definitions here. Let's talk about what a miscarriage is, a stillbirth, and then also a medical termination.
Well, oftentimes people think of miscarriage as just in the first 12 weeks, but actually miscarriage is anything before the 20th week of pregnancy.
Okay.
And stillbirth is anything after the 20th week of pregnancy.
Okay.
And medical termination can include a lot of different things. It can be due to a medical reason with the mother, a poor perinatal diagnosis, a diagnosis that's incompatible with life, and for the health of another fetus. So say selective reduction, which you see often in multiple pregnancies.
Okay. Now, panelists, given these terms that we've just explained, which of these terms, I guess, best describes your situation? Emily, let's start with you.
My first pregnancy, I was lost because of a miscarriage. That was very early on. Okay. My second and third pregnancies had to be medically terminated.
Okay. All right. And Deborah?
My first pregnancy was also a miscarriage very early on, and my second pregnancy was a medical termination.
Okay. And Suzanne?
My first loss was a miscarriage. My second was, we'll talk more later, a medical termination, and my third was a miscarriage.
So let's talk about that, panelists, a little more in depth with your own specific situations. I guess let's just talk about what your experience was like for your miscarriages when they were early. I know you guys have some that were early in your pregnancies. Emily, let's start with you.
Okay, the miscarriage that I had was, I had just taken a pregnancy test at home. I hadn't even gone to see a doctor. Of course, I shared the news with my husband. We were both really excited about it. And we had actually just gone on a trip to the East Coast to visit my family and told my entire family, cousins and aunts and everything. And while we were on that trip is when I experienced a miscarriage. So because I was so excited about it, it was very, of course, sad and kind of like bewildering. And it was even a little bit, I experienced a kind of like different and maybe more intense sadness than I did with the subsequent losses that I had, just because the subsequent ones I was a little bit more, I guess, mentally prepared for, having experienced the first one and the second one. Mm-hmm. So even though it was very early on and I hadn't even gone to see a doctor or gotten an ultrasound or anything, it was, I was kind of like, I was really sad and freaked out. And that's what happened with the first one, with the miscarriage. But then later on, I had, some more significant issues going on.
Deborah, let's talk about your situation.
It was similar for me, that it was very early on, and I had just taken the pregnancy test. I had gone to see the doctor, but just to have another pregnancy test, just that they confirmed that I was pregnant with the blood test. But then it was only less than 2 weeks later, and that I had the miscarriage and went into the emergency room, and they didn't see the pregnancy. And I felt very, very sad, and it seemed like the end of the world to me. Mm-hmm. At the time, even though it was so early on. However, I felt like the doctors and the people around me just kind of made it seem rather trivial. Like it was so early, I shouldn't even be concerned about it. You know, they make pregnancy tests very sensitive now, and women find out so much earlier than they would have. And so we become very attached to the idea of being pregnant. And so, but to me, it was the end of the world at that time. And then later when the following pregnancy occurred and everything that happened with that took place, it of course overshadowed, at least for me, it was a much more devastating loss what happened, because we were so much more cautious about telling anybody. We told everybody right away the first time, as soon as we took that pregnancy test, we announced, and then it was over in the blink of an eye. And then when we got pregnant the second time, we waited and we followed the rule, the 3-month rule that you don't tell anybody until you're 3 months along. And it was a great big family announcement. And then not too long after that, only about 2 months later, was when we found out that what was going to happen with that pregnancy. And so it was much more devastating for us then, because it felt so much more permanent. And I almost don't even think about the first pregnancy anymore, because also I think partly because of what they told me too, that I kind of came to believe that it wasn't as significant because it was so early.
So Yvonne, is that common? It's kind of shocking to me. I guess it shouldn't be that sometimes medical providers dismiss it.
It's unfortunately, it happens all the time. If you have someone who has really good supportive care, you're so lucky, because although I think people in the medical profession, they mean well, and they see this all the time. But for, you know, the families, this may be the first time they're going through it, and it can be very devastating. And we also live in a culture that tends to minimize grief. I recently went to a conference where someone cited a study where they asked people in the street, how long's grief last? And people said, oh, you know, 2 to 3 weeks. So, you know, we're living in a culture that doesn't recognize grief. And for moms and dads that go through this, it's incredibly difficult to try to grieve in an environment like that, because it's not recognized, it's not validated, and it's very, very difficult.
Okay. Suzanne, let's talk about your experience.
For me, my first two pregnancies resulted in two healthy children. So the first pregnancy that I lost was actually my third pregnancy. And I had seen a doctor at 11 and a half weeks, I believe, and things were looking good. And, you know, as we had done previously, we told everybody right away. I mean, we were excited, and we'd been planning this and hoping for this. And we'd always been fortunate to conceive rather easily. So had no reason to think that anything was wrong. But about a week later, I started having some spotting, and it ended up resulting that the baby's heartbeat had stopped. But I was actually at the hospital taking, they offer a class for people that are going to get an amniocentesis. And I was actually attending that class at the time. And I thought, well, I'm just here. I'll just go upstairs and have them take a look. But I'm sure everything's fine. And they spent quite a while looking. And I think the overwhelming feeling was shock, disbelief, and denial.
Because you had two healthy children.
Right.
Already.
I thought, what? I remember specifically thinking, you know, if I were them and I were looking at this ultrasound, I would probably think the same thing, but they're wrong. They must be wrong. How can, I'm not having any pain. Of course, the pain came, you know, within a day. But I just kept remember saying, are you sure? Are you sure? Are you sure? And I was very fortunate to receive very compassionate care during that experience. So I think for me, it was just, you know, like I said, because I had had the two pregnancies that had ended well, I just was very, very shocked and of course, deeply saddened.
Okay.
You know, what I see that often happens is that you go through a loss, and at the time you're going through it, it feels surreal, like you're in a fog. And that's when everyone comes around you and provides support. And then a couple months later, when the fog lifts and then you're really starting to feel the impact of what happened, everyone's going about their life. Everyone thinks that you're better. And that's the time that can be so hard and so lonely in your loss.
Right. When it comes to support, I know that has to be really important when going through any kind of emotional time in your life. So let's talk about the support that you did receive and how that helped you through this process. Emily, I'll start with you.
Well, my family, of course, was extremely supportive of me, especially my, you know, my mother, my father, my sister, and also my husband. Cousins, aunts, and uncles were also supportive, but my immediate family were, of course, my husband was right there with me, and he was experiencing with me, so he was very sweet and gentle and compassionate with me. And my parents, even though they're far away, like, called me often, and that helped. My friends that were very helpful to me in their responses to me, and some friends and a lot of coworkers and a lot of kind of acquaintances in my life that were not helpful to me. So I had to kind of pick and choose who I could reach out to. There just were a few select people who really knew what to say, the right things to say. I think the majority of people didn't know what to say or how to respond to me. So I did have support, but I ended up kind of doing my own thing with my healing. I didn't really find any like support online or in community groups. I didn't really know what to look for, so I ended up just kind of keeping to my own family and friends and finding my own ways to heal myself.
Emily and Deborah's type of loss with the medical termination, you know, I think it's really one of the most under-supported losses. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to find support for women who've gone through medical terminations because oftentimes there's a lot of fear of talking about it for fear of judgment.
Okay.
And so I know, Emily, we had talked, it's very hard on the internet when you do a search really to find supportive places, but there is one site that's very good, which is theheartbreakingchoice.com. So if anybody's out there listening who is looking for a non-biased support, that's a really good place to go.
It was interesting to me to kind of experience how people reacted to me. People that I expected to be very supportive and compassionate, some of them I was surprised to find out that they couldn't really handle the situation talking about it. And some people that I knew very some people that I didn't know very well were remarkable in how compassionate they were towards me. So it was interesting to kind of see how people can deal with other people's grief, even if they may be close in your life or not close.
Right. Deborah, what did support look like for you?
I had a lot of support from my husband and my immediate family. All of my friends in our circle were very supportive. However, I found that I backed away from many of my friends, especially those who'd had children and their pregnancies didn't have any complications. I just felt that I couldn't relate to them at the time, and I just didn't feel like being reminded of, it was just another reminder of what could have been that wasn't. And I felt a lack of support from outside services. I didn't really feel like there was support for me out there. The circumstances of our pregnancy, we were working with a genetics counselor, and I felt pretty close to her. She was very helpful. There was a counselor at the hospital who gave me some information on support groups, but warned me that they may be judgmental of our circumstances, and so I really didn't even bother trying to go through those organizations, and I didn't really bond with her. We didn't really connect, but I did have a connection with the genetics counselor, and she was really helpful. So at first, I felt very isolated and alone, and didn't really know where to turn. And then eventually she matched me with someone who had gone through the same experience under the same circumstances, who had a similar personality, and she felt we might be able to talk. And
great.
She gave me her number and she called me, and she was very helpful. And it just felt so good to be able to talk to somebody who who had gone through the same thing, but also then she, at that time, she had had successful pregnancies, pregnancies that didn't have that outcome. And so it was a big comfort to me to talk to her.
Good. Suzanne, what about you?
As I'm hearing them talk, I'm thinking both from my own experience and also the experience of the callers that have called into Empty Cradle.
Because you're part of Empty Cradle. You work with Empty Cradle.
Yes.
Okay.
These are people who have experienced pregnancy loss under a variety of circumstances. And I think the one common thread is that we try to provide to everyone is just that you're not alone. And it sounds, I know that's such a cliche statement that people use all the time, but it's really so important, I think, especially like for me, the second loss, which was a complicated loss, I felt like, gosh, this happened to me already. Why is this? And I didn't realize, sadly, that it does happen to lots of families. And just knowing that it does happen and that there's hope for healing and that people have not only survived the experience but have actually come to a place of acceptance and peace and getting out of that place where you're just so devastated.
Yvonne, I want to talk about grief and how men and women express grief differently. I'm trying to relate to the stories that you women are sharing with us today. And even though I haven't lost my own child, I don't know what you're going through, but I have experienced the loss of a sibling. And I know that that can tear families apart. Right. In my family, it actually brought us together, but it's because we were very intentional about it. This is not going to separate us. This is going to bring us together.
Right.
And I'm just wondering what that grief process looks like and what we should be aware of when going through something like this.
Well, you know what I hear very commonly in my practice is that initially when the loss happens, there's a real coming together. But as the grief moves on, oftentimes couples grieve differently. And there's instrumental grievers who deal with grief more cognitively, might get real busy. And then there's intuitive grievers who tend to really want the emotional support and social support. And when you have different, and this can be, typically men are seen as more instrumental grievers, but that's not always the case. Some women can be that as well. But what happens is you have this difference in grieving, and then that can lead to a lot of misunderstandings. Like a lot of moms may feel like, why isn't he grieving? Right. You know, why I'm so alone in this? Where's his grief? And oftentimes with dads, you often see a delayed grief because dads have this protective measure that they're trying to take care of mom when she's having a hard time. And sometimes moms are very surprised to find at the year anniversary, dad's breaking down. Or you see a seesaw effect. Mom's doing better, dad feels down. Dad's doing better, mom feels down. There's a way there's kind of a rhythm to that. And so all these things can really lead to a lot of miscommunication. But I'd really like to say that there's real myth out there that once you lose your baby, you're going to lose your marriage. Like it's going to, you know,
everything's going to unravel.
Mm-hmm. And Compassionate Friends, which is one of the biggest organizations in the United States for bereaved parents, did a study, two studies actually, and found that, you know, bereaved parents are not any more likely to divorce than other groups. So I think it's an important myth to dispel because then when you lose your baby, you think, oh gosh, now I'm going to lose my family. And that's not necessarily the case, but you do need to keep your communication lines open and respect each other's different ways of grieving.
Right. What advice do you have for those women whose husbands, maybe they are experiencing the grief, but they're not showing it and therefore the woman just doesn't know what to do?
Right. I think educating moms a lot on ways that dads often grieve differently and what that looks like is important. I think bringing dads into the process, into the fold, is important. Dads are often really forgot about in this whole process, and dads have their own feelings about it. And often, as Suzanne said, they feel incredibly helpless about it, and they don't know what to do, and they see mom upset, and they don't know how to fix it. You know, men like to kind of make things better and fix it.
People are always asking, how's your wife doing?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Wow. Yes. They don't even...
Yeah. Right. They don't even acknowledge that perhaps he's... Yes. Devastated as well.
Sure.
And then, of course, yeah.
Yeah. Right. And you know, like Suzanne had said, in early losses, you know, I think men attach the pregnancy as it goes along, you know. And so in the earlier losses, it may be harder, you know, not for everybody, but for some. And I think we really have to work on getting women's support, you know, outside the relationship too sometimes as well, and making sure they're supported. And also, you know, letting them know it doesn't mean he's a bad guy. You know, you didn't marry the wrong person.
Right.
It's just that they have different ways of dealing and coping with situations.
Okay.
I think, too, that it's so different with men and women dealing with the loss of a pregnancy, because I know that when I had my losses, my body just felt so lonely. Like, my body just felt, like, empty and, like, sad. And he had more of, like, a intellectual sadness, which I also had. You know, I also lost the expectations and everything like that. But my body just, like, it was, like, a physical feeling that he didn't have. So I think, you know, like Yvonne said, like, definitely communicating with each other and talking about what you're actually feeling, like, physically and emotionally, I think is really important.
Yeah. Yvonne, is that what's referred to as a secondary loss?
Well, secondary losses are any losses that come about as a result of your first loss. So yes, I mean, feeling like you're not communicating with your partner as a result of loss can be a secondary loss. One of the big ones is this loss of the blissful naivete that you see other pregnant women
have. The pregnancy glow and all
of
that.
Yes, that is lost.
Yeah.
It really is lost for moms who've been through loss, because you don't ever take it for granted. You've been on the other side of that statistic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very hard to be reassured that things are going to be okay. And so, yeah, those are secondary losses, all those things. As Emily said, certain friends who she maybe thought would come through who didn't. That's a secondary loss. A lot of moms talk about that and dads, that they don't. Some of the friends, you really know who your friends are in this.
Right.
And I think grief, you know, it's like a deer in headlights. People do not know what to say and do. And I just tell people out there, you just have to show up. Okay. You just have to be there. You have to be a presence. You know, find ways to help. Don't wait for them to call you.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or just a simple, I'm sorry.
Right.
I love you. I'm sorry.
Right.
Or I don't know what to say, but I'm here.
Yes. Right. One other aspect of men's partners grieving is that my husband shared with me that he was actually almost in a way afraid to show, because I was grieving so deeply and I was so sad. He was afraid to really show. It sounds strange because we're very close. But at the same time, he what ended up happening is one of his close friends had lost his father within a period of weeks prior to our loss. And that was a very profound loss for him. So the two of them went and had a beer and talked. And he said he felt more comfortable sharing with his friend John because he wanted to be strong for me.
I see.
So that can happen. And but sometimes we misinterpret that as that they're
that
not
they don't care.
Sad.
Yeah,
right.
They're not feeling the same thing.
Yeah.
Right. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more after the break. So when we come back, we're going to talk about ways you can get the help you need after losing a child and ways you can approach this delicate topic with friends and loved ones. We'll be right back.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Welcome back. Today we are talking about miscarriage and stillbirth, dealing with loss. This is part of a two-part series that we're doing. And Yvonne Rothermel is our expert. She's a licensed clinical social worker. And prior to going into the break, we started to talk a little bit about what do you say to someone who is enduring loss, who's just lost a child. And Yvonne, I want to throw this over to you first. What are some of your recommendations? And then we'll ask some of the panelists what worked for them, what didn't work, what should you say, what should you not say?
First of all, if you don't know what to say, don't avoid the person, because that's the worst thing you can do, because that just adds to the isolation and loneliness.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, just saying, I don't know what to say, I just want to give you a hug and I'm so sorry.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's not okay to offer cliches like, oh, you can get pregnant again. Oh, you know, there's this, sometimes people see these losses as replaceable, and every pregnancy and every baby needs to be mourned. And so you don't want to minimize at all their loss. So I think that's important. And I think also not saying but doing is important, where you can, you know, show up. Maybe if they have other kids, you can help carpool, you can get a food tree going, you can, what's really helpful, I think, is getting a memorial fund together of friends who just get, you know, donate a little bit and give it to them for them to buy a bench or buy a star that they name after them, some sort of, you know, active thing, plant a garden, a tree, you know. it just show up. That's the most important thing. Don't go away, because that's the worst thing you can do for people. Okay. I also think, you know, there's a myth out there that if you bring it up, you're going to upset the person. Mm-hmm. But the truth is, it's on their mind 24/7.
Right.
So, you know, by bringing it up and saying, hey, you know, how are you? I've been thinking about you. How are you doing? And then use the baby's name if they named it. How's Maya doing? I'm thinking about you and Maya. How are you doing with all that? Or, you know, just bring it up, because bringing it up is not going to make them, usually in most cases, not more sad. It may for some people, but usually not, because they're thinking about it anyway.
Right. Suzanne, let's start with you. What did people say? What worked? What didn't work?
Like Yvonne said, just being present. There's nothing you can say to really make that person feel better. There's no magic words or sentence that you can offer them. So just simply expressing love and support. I'm sorry. It really speaks volumes. And again, not minimizing the loss. One of the kindest things that one of my friends, who interestingly doesn't have children, is not married, she's single, she bought a book for my children called We Were Gonna Have a Baby, But We Had an Angel Instead, and she sent it to them. And it's a beautiful book, and it's meant for children. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a very beautiful gesture, especially coming from someone who doesn't have a family, you know, so that was a very, very thoughtful and kind thing. Perhaps not saying I understand if you really haven't experienced any sort of profound loss in your life, it may not feel like a loving comment. Right. But to me, I never felt resentful of anyone who was trying, who was trying to be supportive. You know, my own mother was unfortunately not one of the most supportive people. You know, she kept saying, well, why do you keep trying to get pregnant? Why do you keep doing that? And, you know, rather than when I would share news of being pregnant, she would say, you know.
So put doubt in your mind even.
Right. I don't know so much if it was doubt so much as I just wanted her to celebrate the pregnancy with me, because we celebrate each pregnancy. We don't know how it's going to end, but we celebrate each pregnancy.
Right. Deborah, tell us about your situation. What worked? What didn't work?
The same thing. Mm-hmm. Saying, I'm sorry, I'm here. Just knowing that they were there, and my friends were not backing away from me. They weren't hiding from me. And like I said, I was shying away from them for my own reasons. But I knew that they were there, and they were supportive. They all called. They all sent cards and brought by meals, because we certainly weren't cooking and eating. And, you know, so they were just anything that they could think of to try to make life easier for us at that time, they were doing, whether I responded to them, you know, in the way that they expected me to or not. They still were there, even though I was shying away. And that was what I needed.
One thing that people may not know, and I've heard this from a lot of bereaved parents, including myself, that sending a bouquet, though it's a thoughtful, kind idea, for many of us, it feels like something else we have to take care of, and then it's going to die, and we'll have to throw the dead flowers away.
Oh my goodness, I didn't even think of that.
And yeah, well, why would you?
Right.
It's not intuitive, but I will tell you, when I received flowers, my first thought was, "Oh, thank you," and then it was, "Oh God, I have to care for this," and then it's cut flowers, it's going to die, and it's just another. It sounds strange, but I've met other families where that was a shared experience, but or even a potted plant. Again, I have to water it, I have to care for it. Mm-hmm. So, but in those early days, you're just trying to survive, I think. So perhaps, like Yvonne said, you know, planting something in that child's memory would be a much more profound gift to the bereaved family than sending them a plant,
yeah.
If that makes sense.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. Anyone can really answer this, but I'm wondering, how quickly should someone reach out? I mean, can you do it right away? A lot of times when I know people are grieving, I'm thinking, you know, they may just need some time to themselves in the very beginning, or with their spouse, or whatever, you know, your situation is. Is that true? Or do you want everyone, you know, at your side? I mean, this may depend on the person again.
Yeah. I think that's very individual.
Okay.
And luckily, with technology, we have lots of ways to reach out that's non-intrusive, right? Through email or give a text just saying, I'm thinking of you. And, you know, even if people, like, back away, which I think is very common, you know, you back away for a while, kind of go cocoon.
Yeah.
And I, still getting emails and just saying, you know what, you don't have to respond to this, but I'm just thinking about you.
I love that you said that, because I think that relieves the pressure for you guys to feel like, oh, now I've got to answer all these emails. They're going to be mad at me. I mean, I don't even know if that's going through your head, but I would, you know, I don't want to add, nobody wants to add more pressure. They want to help. That's why they're reaching out. So I like that idea of saying, you don't have to respond. Don't worry. I just want you to know if you need me, I'm here.
I was going to say, sometimes people say, how can I help? One of the most helpful things for many families is sending that initial email. Let people know what has happened so that we don't have to repeat the story over and over in those early days. That's a very helpful thing to do.
But obviously to go to you first.
Of course, yes. Yeah. But what I'm saying is sometimes perhaps one could ask, you know, have you notified, is there some people I could notify? Would that be helpful for you?
Yeah.
I remember sitting and hearing my phone ring and hearing the message and being grateful that they called, not in a place to pick up the phone, but grateful that they called.
Right.
So,
one thing that was not helpful to me, some people had said to me, you know, oh, well, there's a reason for everything. That was not helpful to me in any way, because I was, like Suzanne was saying, I was just trying to, like, get through the day. I was trying to, like, survive the day. And I don't want to, like, intellectually explore, okay, what is the reason for this? And am I at fault, or did I do something wrong, or is there something wrong with me? Because in my case, like, my pregnancies had to be terminated because of a very rare defect that there is very little known about. So to kind of, like, even allow myself to explore possibilities of that I was at fault, or that there's some kind of, like, grand cosmic reason for this happening to me, not helpful, at least in that very initial phase. But one thing that was, like, extremely helpful to me, and it was just such a small gesture, but it was such a relief to me, was, I mean, I was at work, and I'm a cook, so I work in a kitchen, and a coworker of mine was getting a cup of coffee, and he just asked me how my day was, and he had no idea what was actually happening. And I started to, like, tear up and get kind of, like, quivery chin and all that. And he's like, are you okay? And I'm like, I told him, he had known that I was pregnant, and I told him kind of generally, like, the very surface level thing of that, what had happened. And he just said, thank you for telling me that. And I was like, oh, it was such a weight off my shoulders, because in a situation where you're like having a baby is, like, such a happy thing, and pregnancy is such a happy thing, and that's the way it should be. But when you lose a baby, like Yvonne said, a lot of people avoid talking to you because they don't know what to say. Mm-hmm. So then that makes me not know what to say to other people, and I don't know when to say, like, can I talk to you about this, or I just want to, like, vent on you or whatever, because I don't want to be bringing people down too. Right. So for him to just say, thank you for sharing that with me, was so, like, amazingly awesome, because I just felt like, oh, wow, like, you can be here and share the space with me and, like, hear me say my problem and not be, like,
trying to fix it.
Be affected by it, or be all bummed out and, you know, weird. Right. So if you don't know what to say, just say, you know, thank you for sharing that with me, because that was awesome of him to do that.
Yeah. Well, speaking of sharing, I want to thank you guys for being here today and for sharing your experiences with us and with our listeners. I really think that this could help a lot of women out there, and I think you're very brave to share your stories, and I'm sorry for your experiences, but again, if we can help other people, you know, by going through stuff like this, we're certainly going to try. So thank you guys for being here.
Thank you.
I know we didn't talk too much about the various resources available to bereaved parents, but we will link to those resources on the episode page on our website.
For nearly four decades, JMK Security Solutions has provided protection for homes and businesses. I know firsthand. I'm Jeff Beckman, and with my wife, Kim, we started JMK Security Solutions. Our attention to detail, service after the sale, and product knowledge are the foundation of our success. JMK Security has routinely been recognized as the best of Madison for security companies. We expect that trend to continue as the next generation, our son Jeffrey, takes over as president. Let us protect what is valuable to you. JKSecurity.com.
Before we wrap today's show, here's Jeanette McCulloch with some of the best online pregnancy resources.
Hello, Peggy Pals. I'm Jeanette McCulloch of Birthswell. We at Birthswell believe that you as a mother will make the right decisions for your pregnancy and birth when you have access to evidence-based information and a strong support system. That's why I'm here to share with you new media tools to find the information that's right for you. Today, about 1 in 3 women in the United States will give birth by cesarean section. If you have had a surgical birth and are pregnant again, you may be considering a vaginal birth after cesarean, commonly known as a VBAC. 45% of mothers are interested in VBAC, but most deliver by a repeat cesarean section. Why? In some cases, the repeat surgery is medically necessary. But other mothers tell us that they don't feel like they have the information that they needed to make the right decision for their family, or they can't find a provider, or they don't know all the options, including, in some areas, home birth. VBACFacts.com was created by a mom whose first baby was delivered surgically, and she wanted something different for her next birth. She was frustrated by what was available online. She wanted to know the research, to know the risks, and to know her options. After her VBAC, she launched the site for other mothers looking for information. Wondering about the risk of uterine rupture, which is the most common complication of VBAC, or the relative risks of a repeat surgical birth, you'll find it at her site, along with a comprehensive list of resources for finding a VBAC-friendly provider. She also shares a step-by-step plan for women considering a vaginal birth, including tips for talking to those who question your plan. You can also get your questions answered at the very active VBAC Facts community over on Facebook. Just follow the links from the website at VBACFacts.com. Thanks for listening to today's tools for finding the information that's right for you. And be sure to listen to Preggy Pals for more great pregnancy tips in the future.
That wraps up our show for today. If you have questions for Yvonne about the topics we discussed today or other issues dealing with loss, you can send us an email through our website or call our Preggy Pals hotline at 619-866-4775, and we'll get your questions answered. For members of the Preggy Pals Club, this conversation continues as we explore blame as it relates to losing a child. Many parents blame themselves for the loss. So how do you overcome that? Coming up next week, we are continuing our two-part series by focusing on pregnancy after loss, so we hope you'll join us for that. Thanks for listening to Preggy Pals, your pregnancy your way.
This has been a New Mommy Media production. The information and material contained in this episode are presented for educational purposes only. Statements and opinions expressed in this episode are not necessarily those of New Mommy Media and should not be considered facts. While such information and materials are believed to be accurate, it is not intended to replace or substitute for professional medical advice or care, and should not be used for diagnosing or treating healthcare problem or disease or prescribing any medication. If you have questions or concerns regarding your physical or mental health or the health of your baby, please seek assistance from a qualified healthcare provider.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, mamas. Don't forget to check out Mighty Moms. It's our online community built for new moms just like you. Not only can you connect with other moms, but you can also join us backstage for special mom-only online events. And you'll also be notified when we're recording so you can join us as a special guest. Visit our website, newmommymedia.com, and click on the Mighty Moms banner. It's free. That's newmommymedia.com. See you there.